This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is almost 5:38 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Hezril. So as always on this side of the hour, we're waiting to see when the briefing from the DG of Health begins.
Yep, that's right.
But before it does, we have a story for you because it's a pretty interesting one. I think it focuses on this idea of how seriously do we take hate speech in this country? And I think crucially, do we even have a collective understanding of what that term hate speech actually means?
Well, you know, I don't know actually. And sometimes I feel, you know, very discouraged when I go online and see the kinds of things people are saying. And right, that's actually some of the questions that this new study is asking and examining. It was carried out by the center.
So this study surveyed 600 participants across West Malaysia and asked them to rate real-life examples of hate speech on three levels, from not very serious to very serious.
Yeah, and what they found was quite worrying. 87% of respondents think that hate speech has reached moderate or serious levels, with most of it coming from, get this, social media, mass media, and politicians.
Mm. So the findings are one thing. They also outline a few approaches to address different types of hate speech, which include community-led initiatives, education programs, and the judicial system for more serious cases. And I think when you look at those approaches, they are also kind of dependent on what kinds of hate speech we're talking about. Because I think the finding also suggested that perhaps we only take the more serious or extreme or public examples of hate speech seriously, or we've only accounted for that in policy and not the other types.
Yeah, and I guess part of that has to do with how, I guess, easy and hard it is to deal with those less serious forms, right? The things that are said inside, you know, when we go to our friends' houses and that are meant, you know, as half jokes, but really aren't, right? They're subtle attacks on a certain ethnicity or a certain issue. So I'm glad that they brought it up. I'm just not sure, you know, how I imagine, you know, the solutions coming about to actually address these smaller forms of hate speech.
So I brought up this idea of a collective understanding earlier because I do think that's crucial. I think that in some cases, I'm not saying everybody, but I think that there are people who are proud of one facet of how multicultural Malaysia is. And the idea there is, we're so not sensitive. You see, I can say this and you don't mind. And that's because we've all grown up together and this is normal. And so I think that's why, to me, understanding what constitutes hate speech is important, because one person's casual joke is another person's you know, deeply harmful remarks. So until we can kind of understand that, I think it's going to be pretty difficult.
Yeah, and it's interesting, I guess, to see the perhaps the generational gaps and the understandings of what's acceptable and what's unacceptable. So I'm glad that this study picked up on those nuances, and I'm curious as to, you know, how eventually this might pan out in the long term when it comes to clamping down on this.
So we've got a lot to run through. We're going to be speaking after this with Nell Omar, who is the research director at the center. But we'd like to hear from you. I mean, how serious do you... It sounds like a silly question, but I do think it needs asking. You know, do you think that hate speech is a serious problem in our country? And how do you understand the term? How do you define it for yourself? You can call us with your thoughts and questions, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:44 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Hezril. We're talking now about hate speech and what a new study from the Centre has found about this very thing. Again, if you'd like to share your thoughts with us on hate speech in this country, whether or not it is a serious issue in your life, you know, whether you think we have a good definition of what it means, call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, joining us on the line is Nell Omar, Research Director at the Centre. Nell, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank Thanks very much for having me, Lynn and Hajo.
So I wanted to start with something that I found kind of pressing, which is, do you think that we do have a solid collective understanding of what hate speech is in this country and what it covers?
No, I mean, I think even before the research project that we embarked on, I don't think that, you know, we had a solid collective understanding. And with the research project, it was quite clear that this was definitely open to interpretation. But perhaps what the research told us was that what is offensive and what is hateful speech, rather than what is hate speech in terms of how it's usually, you know, legislatively used now, that is clearer to people. So they do have a natural reaction to what they consider to be offensive or hateful speech, but maybe not hate speech in its usual legislative sense.
Hmm. So perhaps you could walk us through the main takeaways of the study. Were there any findings that stood out to you?
Let me just first say that the main objective of the study was to see how people discern between less serious and very serious forms of hate speech. And we took a pretty broad definition of hate speech for this purpose. We took it as anything that can be seen as offensive or hateful and that targeted a group trait. So race and religion were the traits that we focused on. So we presented people with 15 speech samples and to see whether there were consistent ways that people rated things very seriously versus not very seriously. Some of the findings that stood out to us was that there were some statements that were across the board very serious to everyone, regardless of ethnicity. And that usually had to do with religion or religious beliefs. Anything that demeaned religion or religious beliefs, people considered to be very serious. The second finding that stood out to us was that we expected there to be inter-ethnic differences, of course. But what stood out to us was that if you ask a respondent explicitly to think about how the targeted group would feel about that statement, the perception gap reduces. So that was very interesting for us. There were other findings as well, but I think, yeah, those two were the main ones. But it told us that if we were to start out trying to put together a framework to categorize hate speech based on what people deemed was serious or not serious, we are able to do so. This kind of work just needs to be deepened and enhanced.
And so, as you mentioned, their content is a huge role in terms of determining what people found hateful. Can we also talk about context? You know, how does context enter the picture here?
Okay. So I think the clear difference for us is that there were some speech samples where people found it, where people found the content very offensive, or it induced, you know, quite a high level of fear in them personally. But for various reasons, they did not think that it would cause general unrest. As opposed to speech samples, which content-wise were very offensive, were very much inducing of fear, as well as given Malaysia's political dynamics or cultural dynamics, also having a potential to create general unrest or tension between groups. So that's why I think most of the statements that touched on religious beliefs had such high scores on the seriousness factor, because there was a sense there that given our political dynamics, these kinds of statements really had the most potential to stoke some kind of unrest or backlash within our political situation currently.
And another factor I found interesting was, taking a look at how it took a look at the status of the speaker or how publicly known they are, because we've seen examples of this in Parliament, right, for instance, where public figures engage in racist or sexist comments that are sometimes played down after. How does this factor into perhaps normalizing hate speech?
So for us, it's something that for us is defined as hate speech, so, you know, something targeting a group trait, including gender, of course, right? If that is said in Parliament or I more often in social media, really, because that is where a lot of things get amplified, right? The status of the speaker, if that person is not censured, it does make it appear as if this is okay, right? Or this is somewhat permissible. Now, it's not an immediate reaction. Most people's immediate reactions, especially like during the focus groups where we show people speech samples by politicians or people of influence, there would be an immediate reaction of, oh, no, you can't say that. You know, you're in a really influential position. But long term, so certain kinds of statements, if it's said by somebody of influence, responders would be would respond to it a little bit differently. They would go, oh, I see, you know, but there's a very good reason for this politician to say this, you know, they're just going out to get votes. And so, yeah, so that's how normalization plays into it. When people get a little bit cynical, I guess, that's the point I was trying to make.
So we wanted to talk, I think, about recommendations within the study, but actually I want to cycle back to something that you mentioned much earlier on in terms of the main takeaways, because you mentioned that there's a difference, or one of the things that stood out to you was the fact that even within ethnic groups or within certain demographics, there would be differing levels or different examples of hate speech. And maybe you could talk to us about that as well, you know, while we're on the subject of this idea of how things get normalized.
So for example, one of the really interesting focus group sessions was to see how people reacted to a common slur. So say it was a common slur against the Chinese community or the Indian community. So it was really interesting for us to see, within the same community itself, there were huge differences between people who were used to social media and would have seen a lot of it, versus those who are not really exposed to social media. And, for them, having this said generally is very off-putting. There were also differences between people who had a greater diversity of social circles. So people with friends of different races, they usually tended to feel less sensitive about statements that related to their own ethnic group, and more sensitive to statements that refer to other ethnic groups. So this is these were some of the interactions that we saw at play when it comes to within group statements as well as out group statements.
Right. So perhaps Nell, you could take us through some of your recommendations, because they're quite interesting and I guess not very one-sided.
So we came in with the value judgment that we need to balance freedom of expression with the realities of living in a diverse country, right? That being said, we don't think that certain laws need to apply to less serious forms of speech. So lower levels of hate speech would be better responded to if it was if it met with more remedial, more preemptive or rehabilitative measures. So we're coming in from the point of view where look at existing legislation to see whether current definitions of provocative or offensive or even seditious speech, right, would meet criminal thresholds, right? What are criminal thresholds for these sorts of speech? And then look at what is non-criminal and see, okay, what are the other measures that we can take to ameliorate these, right? And a lot of it goes back to how aware are we of what we say and how, you know, potentially offensive or fear-inducing it might be. Based on the research, it was pretty clear that unless you explicitly ask a person to think about how a targeted group might feel, there is, you know, usually an underestimation of how offensive or how threatening a particular statement is.
So I think something else then is when it comes to addressing these more mild or moderate examples of hate speech that may not necessarily fall under, like you said, or in the future might not fall under the purview of legislation and law, what are some other avenues that could be explored? I believe that the study mentions the involvement of NGOs and commissions and the like.
Right, thanks. Yeah, so we know that education sounds like a cliche, but it really, really is important. Maybe not as part of the syllabus, perhaps, although that would be great also. But I think it's more about a wider campaign, a wider awareness, building campaign of what is offensive and what is hateful in Malaysia's context. So and we were talking about this in the online forum that we had just now. I mean, there is really room and a crying need to develop tools where we can learn and teach each other about what is hateful and offensive in Malaysia's context. So that's one, right? Educational awareness building. The other thing that this is really open to debate, right? Is whether we should have a function like a national auditor or steward of what constitutes hate speech in Malaysia, right? So whatever we've come up with from the results of the findings, it's just a starting point, and it is one party's take on how we can categorize hate speech. But with more work on this, should we not have a national function where we talk about, okay, what does count for hate speech in Malaysia, right? How do we categorize it sufficiently, appropriately, so that we can use these definitions in law, in organization code of conduct? If we had a basis, right, by which to compare or to be guided by, then, yeah, we could be going towards having more practical ways of dealing with it in a, you know, at an organizational level. So in companies, HR policies, for instance, or in comments monitoring by a media platform, for example. So, yeah, there's definitely scope for having a national conversation about this, as well as a national policy setting function.
And overall, what are you hoping this study will achieve? And what's next from here now that you've gotten a clearer picture of the situation?
Hopefully to be able to have a clearer picture of the situation. There's been some really interesting critiques and feedback on what we've done, and it's all good. So we do need to figure out how do power structures play into definitions of hate speech. More work in figuring out the definitions and categorization for hate speech would go a long way towards helping the conversation in the country. I think next also is to reach out to interested parties, interested groups to figure out, okay, if we don't want to wait for government action, right, what can, you know, quote-unquote, normal people or normal organizations do, right? If we wanted to get started to talk about civil discourse or hate speech in our organization, what can a code of conduct look like? So yeah, we would love to, you know, start conversation about that with interested parties.
Nell, thank you so much for speaking with us this evening.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you, Ezra.
That was Nell Omar, Research Director at the Centre, talking about their new study which looked at the issue of hate speech in West Malaysia. We do have to emphasise that. They have said that in order to delve into the issue in Sabah and Sarawak, it would be more productive, I think, to have a separate study. So we do have some messages.
Yeah. So it looks like... Maggie says hate speech is like a seed of discontent sown. If we don't stop it, and when it takes root and grows, it'll destroy whatever harmony that others have built previously.
And that's in relation to this central question that we were having about hate speech or hateful speech, which is, do we even have a working definition of it? Do we even understand it properly? And again, you know, if you would like to perhaps share examples of times you've encountered it in your life, or, you know, what do you define as hate speech? We'd love to hear it. You can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We do have a interesting thought here from Chan, who says, you know, look at freedom of speech in the United States. Seeing them speak openly regarding their president is amazing. Never imagine it can happen in Malaysia, how good it would be. On the other hand, if we are at the receiving end, it's not easy. But as a public figure, if it is what you'll need to take, isn't it? And I think that well, we don't have time now, but I would like to expand on that idea of the difference between freedom of speech, speaking your mind, and hate speech, because they're very different.
Yeah, and I think there's certainly like fine lines in some cases between both, right?
So we're going to be exploring this as well as the messages that have come through on Pulpit Pulpit Parliament after the 6 o'clock news. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.